So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. So for those of you who are new, we've begun over these past months teaching from this text called The Way of the Bodhisattva. There have been a number of teachings already given on that. So if you're interested, you can go to our website, and these teachings on these prior chapters are there, or even better, just purchase it for yourself. The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva, 8th century Buddhist master from India, is really one of the great texts of really spirituality, religion, whatever you want to call it, in the world. It's a Buddhist text, but it's really it sets forth in a very personal, it's all in verse and very personal, how to lead an awakened life. How to lead a life based on wisdom and compassion. How to lead a life of selflessness. How to lead a life that really brings benefit to others and helps people in the most essential way, to see how their own mind is the cause of so much of their suffering. So just by way of a brief synopsis, bringing us where we are today, the first three chapters are really all about Shantideva introducing us to this idea of an awakened mind, and that all beings have this awakened mind, and this awakened mind and the realization of this awakened mind is the source of all enlightened living. Going back to the time of the Buddhas, and through this time, and it's not just a mind only of Buddhists. It is the awakened mind, the enlightened mind of all beings. And it is in opposition to the mind that most of us know, which is this very small self-mind, the mind of I, me, mine. And the mind, because it's so centered on the self and the I and the me and the mind, is endlessly confused about, how to live a happy life, how to live a life of wisdom and compassion, how to be at ease, how to really cultivate all the positive qualities and realize them in one's life. It is because we are identified with this very petty, narrow mind and don't realize that we are at the same time the heirs to this enlightened mind. So Shantideva spends three chapters really encouraging us in that direction of understanding that we have this enlightened mind, really kind of encouraging us, inspiring us to want to make that kind of, for our spiritual life, our inner life, the centerpiece. And of course, the motivation is not just to alleviate our own suffering, but most importantly, to alleviate the great suffering and ignorance that dominates our world and is the source of all the problems. If you look at all the problems of the world, it is because of delusion that people see themselves as separate from each other, separate from the earth, separate from life, separate from themselves, separate from the people, even the people they love. They don't realize the interconnection, the oneness, the sameness of all life. And even though so many people have an intellectual or ideal of this, they don't really know how to realize this. So Shantideva has encouraged us in the direction of this of living and walking an altruistic path in life. Having done that in the first three chapters, he then basically says, having set forth his great aspiration, How do we, in a very practical way, maintain it? Which, of course, now we're getting into, you know, the practice. How do I practice this? In a prior chapter called Carefulness, he really says, you know, we have to be very careful with this seed of spirituality or awakening within us. It is very precious and it is very fragile. And if we don't take good care of it, it will not develop, it will not grow. So he encourages us to be careful and to really be clear about what supports it and what doesn't. He really says quite clearly that all our emotional afflictions and all our neuroses and all our, you know, et cetera, everybody knows what I'm talking about, all our selfishness, blah, 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 all of that, he says, is our enemy. Enemy meaning those mind states, even, you know, undertaken in the privacy of our own mind, you see. See, most of our, we see on the world and in relationships, we see these afflictive, negative, harmful mind states manifesting in harmful actions that people do to each other. Individuals do to each other, whole peoples do to each other. But he says the source of it is the mind. And that we have to be very careful that these mind states, which are our enemies because these mind states do us harm, they do not support our ideals, our aspirations, our altruism. They actually not only do not support, but they do harm to. And in our colloquial English, we say, someone who wants to harm me is what? My enemy. Somebody who deliberately wants to harm me. Right? And so if we knew somebody wanted to do us harm, we would not invite them into our house. We would not turn over the house to them. We would not do their every bidding, would we? That's crazy. To consciously invite somebody, or even unconsciously, invite someone who wants to do us harm into our very home and let them roam about freely. And yet, he says, these mind states, anger, greed, fear, hatred, intolerance, jealousy, despair, you know, et cetera, we just let them come into our mind and we just make them very comfortable. Right? We serve them for hours, for days, for decades. Right? He said we so we have to be careful. So that was the last chapter. And again, there are prior talks and you can read the text. Now, this next chapter, chapter 5, is called Vigilant Introspection. And again, I'll be skipping around. 2 weeks ago at the Day of Mindfulness, I did teach from this, so there may be a little review for those who were there, but we will move on. So, in the first stanza, he says, and again, for those who are not familiar with this, this is verse. He writes this whole text, this profound text in verse. So he says, those who wish to keep the trainings must with perfect self-possession guard their minds. Without this guard upon their mind, the trainings cannot be preserved. The trainings mean whatever it is you want to train in. Okay? If you want to train in mindfulness, if you want to train in meditation, if you want to train in love, if you want to train in compassion, if you want to train in wisdom, if you want to train in intelligence, if you want to train in patience, if you know, whatever you want to train in, right? If you want to train in kindness, if you want to train in self-restraint, whatever you want to do, you cannot keep those goals and objectives you have for yourself if you do not have a guard upon your mind. This is key. It's essential. if there's no guard upon your mind, if there's no sentinel, no sentry, watching what comes in and out of our mind, forget it. Everybody here know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So many of us here have followed a religious path, followed a spiritual path, followed a secular humanist path, whatever path you followed in your pursuit of goodness, in your pursuit of altruism. And if you wonder why still we are not able to live in congruence with our values, with our stated values, it is because this very significant thing is missing within us. And that is this guard upon the mind. And then he says, if with mindfulness is rope, the elephant of mind is tethered all around, our fears will come to nothing, and every virtue will drop in our hand. So, because the emphasis is in Buddhism in terms of transforming the actions of ourselves and everybody else in the world is based on a deeper understanding that no matter what kind of external changes you make in the world, if the minds of human beings are not changed, nothing will change. Right? And if we're students of history, we see how true that is, unfortunately. So he says, he calls this mind of ours an elephant. For those of you who have not grown up around elephants, you may wonder about what's he talking about. In 8th century in India, elephants were around. They were the biggest thing around, right? Strongest, most powerful, biggest animal. Left to their own devices, a wild elephant can do lots of damage, right? And there's nobody able to restrain it. It's too big. And many of us, our minds are like that. They are a wild elephant. And when it starts stomping about, throwing things this way and that, we do not have a capacity to restrain it. Is that clear? So if there are people in here who go, why is my mind, why am I unable to restrain my mind from doing and acting in all kinds of ways that I know are harmful to myself and others? It is because it is not trained. It has not been tamed. And the first thing, if we want to tame it, we have to tie it to the rope of mindfulness. This mind that is aware of itself, aware of what's going on. That is the rope. Right? If all you see is the footprints of the elephant and the damage the elephant has done, that is not going to benefit you, is it? We have to see the elephant itself. What is that elephant? It's our very mind. And all the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, etc., that are arising in it. This is the elephant of mind, and we have to first lasso it. Before we can train it, we have to lasso it. Mindfulness is the lasso. Is that clear? We have to be aware of it. We have to see it, or else we're in the dark. Another way to say it is mindfulness is the light. Right? In our meditation earlier today, we turned on the light of mindfulness in terms of just our body, our breath. Everybody here, you know, we all have bodies. We all live in our bodies. Our eyes, our ears, our nose, our mouth, our senses are all, that's how we live, in our bodies. And yet many of us are not really aware of our bodies, present to our know our bodies. So we begin with mindfulness of our body, mindfulness of the breath. But the most essential mindfulness is mindfulness of the mind. Because the source of all our misery and the source of all our happiness lies within the mind. nowhere else. So we need a way to make contact with this mind, and that is mindfulness. For all anxiety and fear and pain in boundless quantity, their source and wellspring is the mind itself, as he who spoke the truth declared. So he's now going, he's referring to the Buddha. So again, this is very important. This is a real turnaround for people following a spiritual religious path, is to see that the fundamental source of our suffering is our own mind. It's not the external world, and it's not others. If we do not make that turn and clearly recognize that our own mind is the source of our suffering, is the source of our happiness, we will always be externally driven and ever and externally driven to always try to manipulate the external world to get our suffering to cease and to make ourselves happy. Which is what? It's what everybody's up to. Right? It's what everybody's up to in our society. Endlessly manipulating those around them in the external world, believing that somehow if I can just get it right, then what? Then I'll be happy. It's kind of simple. When I get this, when I get that, when I get rid of this, when I get rid of this, then I will be happy. But that doesn't work. Just look around you. Look around the world. No matter how much people get, no matter how much they try to control others, still, their fundamental unease never ceases. Even though it might have momentary of relief. So again, to see that the source of all our anxiety, our fears, our angers, etc., are within our own mind is a key, because from that will come this turning to want to look within. And then he goes on with a very famous analogy. He says, harmful beings are everywhere like space itself. Impossible it is that all should be suppressed. But let this angry mind alone be overthrown. It's as though all foes have been subdued. And then he says, to cover all the earth with sheets of leather, where could such amounts of skin be found? But with the leather soles of just my shoes, it is as though I cover all the earth. Very simple analogy. Imagine that the whole earth is covered with thorns. Right? Anybody ever, and you have bare feet. Anybody ever step on a thorn in their bare feet? How does it feel? It hurts. So just imagine, it's not like a couple of thorns out there, but the whole world is covered with thorns. And you have bare feet. And you're sick of it. Now, what to do? What to do, right? You realize, well, I'm a vegetarian, I'm not into leather, but let's say the analogy was leather. What do I do? Do I set upon the hard work covering every thorn in the world with leather? A lot of work. Impossible, you might say, to cover the whole earth. Or do I cover my feet? Just my feet. If I cover my feet, if I have on a good pair of boots, I can walk on thorns, can't I? So, this is a choice point. This is a choice point. How do I solve the issue of my own suffering? and suffering, we're talking about anger and resentment, irritation, frustration, anxiety, fear, terror, sadness, despair, envy, greed, lonely. You know what I mean? How do I end my own internal suffering? Do I endlessly act out in the world trying to control and manipulate to get the world? That means covering the world with leather. Or do I just simply take care of my own feet first? Once my feet are covered, then I can walk about this world freely, without pain and suffering. I can move about this world with ease and do whatever needs to be done. So Shanti Deva is giving us this very clear analogy to kind of help us get it. And thus the outer course of things I myself cannot restrain, but let me just restrain my mind, and what is there left to be restrained? See, this is the tough one. We are experts on everything else. We are experts on restraining and changing and reforming everybody else, right? But when it comes to ourselves, we say what? Too difficult. Ooh, this meditation, this mindfulness, this spiritual life, too difficult. And Shanti Sever says, we are so backwards. Right? Restraining the world. That's difficult. Restraining the minds and actions and speech of the world. That's a very difficult task. Restraining my own mind, the actions of my own speech, the actions of my own body, well, that's a good place to begin, isn't it? If I can't even restrain the actions of my own body, speech, and mind, what right have I to go out there in the world and tell everybody else how they should be restraining theirs? Which we do, from morning till night. Right? If we're honest. I mean, we don't say it. We think it. Right? We have the answer to everybody we run into, everybody in the world, everybody in our family, all our friends, people we work with, the whole country, the whole world. We have the answers to all their problems. Don't we? Of course. And yet, in our own lives, do we have that integrity in our own actions of body, speech, and mind? All those who fail to understand the secret of the mind, the greatest of all things, although they wish for joy and an end to sorrow, will wander to no purpose uselessly. Therefore, I will take in hand and will protect this mind of mine. What use to me are many disciplines if I can't guard and discipline my own mind? So again, the secret of mind, the greatest of things. Every human being has a mind, right? Rich, poor, Americans, African, I mean, what it doesn't matter. Everybody has a mind in this world. Every human being, every sentient being has a mind, right? And this mind is the source of all positive feelings and all negative feelings. All positive thoughts, all negative thoughts. All positive mind states, all negative mind states. All wholesomeness, all unwholesomeness resides within the mind of each and every human being. There is no difference in that. We are all the same. So this mind itself is the greatest thing. But we don't recognize that. We're too busy playing with our toys. We're too busy lost in our electronics and our stimulation and our ideas and our images to see that it's the mind itself which is the greatest treasure we have. And if you remember the earlier chapter, Shanti Davis says, this mind is actually an enlightened mind. It is really the source of all wisdom and love and compassion and understanding. It is the great treasure that all of us have. And yet we don't value it. We let any garbage come into it, don't we? He says, so what use to me are many disciplines if I can't guard and discipline my own mind? So many of us, again, we undertake all kinds of disciplines. Religious disciplines, spiritual disciplines, altruistic disciplines. All these things that we do to create a better world and a better way for ourselves. But if I can't discipline and guard my own mind, all of this will not amount to much. Any questions? Shanti Dev is very strong. Some of us may not like how strong he is. Are there any questions about this so far before I go on? Anybody not agree with this or have any questions about this? Don't be shy if you're new. That means everybody's in 100% total agreement. You all just... I mean, it does make sense. Yes.
Okay, if you don't mind. Sorry.
You'll be fine. Well, you don't have to say your name, and they can't see you from the live stream.
So I was shy to speak up because I have not been here very many times. But mm-hmm. So I'm listening to your analogy of covering the world with leather versus covering your own 2 feet. And I wonder if you are a person who prefers barefoot, if it is within that analogy to have safe places where you can be bare feet. Do you need to have that idea of there are no thorns, or there are thorns everywhere?
And say that. I'm not clear what you're asking.
So I'm going with your analogy.
Okay. Well, it's Shanti Davis. Okay.
Yes, but which you were standing by today. So the idea: do I always need to be that covered where because there are no safe? There's always thorns, or can I expect that there are places in our lives that maybe there are no thorns and you can, or do you always need that level of cover?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So again, thorns or talk is really suffering, okay? So that's what he's saying, in this world of suffering. Not only I suffer, people in my family suffer, friends suffer, colleagues suffer, everywhere, people all throughout the world, there is suffering, there's emotional pain, there's, right? Okay. Saying that's everywhere, including within me. So in relationship to that, okay, he's saying, where do I begin? You know, where do I get most bang for my buck? Do I try to change the whole world first? Or do I begin with myself? So the idea of covering your feet is just to do what you said. Right? Because you're not really, that's an analogy. So you're not really covering your thing with something hard. You're covering your feet with mindfulness, with awareness, with understanding, with compassion, with love. This is what he's talking about. This is the safe place. And when you have this, right, you can enter the world with all its miseries and all its angers and all its fears and all its intolerance, you know, and not be hurt. Because you have something that is safe. That is the covering. Okay? It's not dogma. It's not, you know, it's not like that. It's creating this safe place. It's sort of like where we began today. You know, just in our mindfulness meditation, right? That we began today. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, can each of us develop a place within our own body, mind, where we feel okay? Where we feel okay. No matter what's going on in the external world, the ups and downs of life, within my own mind and body, can I have a place that is clear, that is at ease, that is open, and that is nurturing for me? Okay? No matter what's going on out there. Because can we control what's going on out there? Would we like to? Yes. But many of us, having been beaten up in the course of life, realize you can't control other people. You can't make them do what you want. Even though we try very hard, we can't do that. We can't make everybody vote the way we'd like them to vote. We can't make everyone treat everyone else the way we'd like them to treat everyone else. Isn't that the truth? That's the way of the, that's the truth. But I can make sure that I act in 100% accordance with my values. But how can I do that if I don't have any control upon my mind? Does that answer you? Thank you. Those disabled by ill health are helpless, powerless to act. The mind, when likewise cramped by ignorance, is impotent and cannot do its work. So in the same way, when our body is well, our body can do its work. Do whatever needs to be done physically, right? When our body is sick, even though there are things we want to do, we can't do that because our body is ill. In the same way, now he's talking again about this the spiritual life, this life of value and meaning and altruism, saying, in the same way, our mind has set upon itself this intention to live a life of value and meaning and purpose. And yet, if it is sick, right, how can it accomplish that? Right? Right? Does everybody know? I mean, it's kind of simple when he points it out like that. Right? In the same way, when our body is very sick, we understand that physically we don't have the energy to do the things we want to do physically. In the same way, we don't often realize that the reason I cannot follow through on all my goals and aspirations for myself in life is because my mind is not healthy. He says it's ignorant. It's really ignorant of how to take care of itself. So therefore it is sick. And then he says, for those who have no introspection, though they hear the teachings, ponder them, or meditate, like water seeping from a leaking jar, their learning will not settle into memories. Many are endowed with joyful diligence. They're learned also and imbued with faith. But through the fault of lacking introspection, they will not escape the stain of wrongdoing. So again, I think Shantideva and those of you who have been coming realize that even though he's this 8th century Indian monk, yogi, whatever he was, he really understands the human condition and speaks very passionately and insightfully about the human condition. So he says, for those of us who have heard over the course of our life various spiritual, religious, humanistic, altruistic teachings, we've pondered them, we've meditated on them, like water seeping from a leaking jar, they have not settled in our minds, right? They leak away. Again, he says, even people who have joyful diligence, learned, imbued with faith, though through the fault of lacking introspection, they will still, you know, life will continue to oftentimes spiral downward. Now, when he is talking about introspection, what is he talking about? This chapter is called Vigilant Introspection. So this is very important now. Let me just spend a few moments talking about that. So mindfulness, we might say, is the gatekeeper, right? And again, the gatekeeper is a wonderful analogy, right? Everybody know what a gatekeeper is? What a sentry is? Gatekeeper sentry's job is to be at the entrance, attentive, and to check, to be aware of what's passing. That's the sentry's duty, to be on guard and to know when someone or something is trying to gain entry into whatever it is the guard or the sentry is protecting, right? So mindfulness is the guard. Right? There's got to be something in our minds that is aware of the thoughts, feelings, perceptions that are wanting to come into our mind. If there's nobody at the gate, what's going to happen? Anybody and everybody can come on in. And many of us have minds like that. Good things come in, bad things come in. Wholesome thoughts come in, unwholesome thoughts come in. Altruistic thoughts, loving thoughts, ideal thoughts come in, and just garbage comes in, right? And we just what? Yeah, we just kind of let it in. Got a good mind state? Good. Got a miserable mind state? Miserable. Right? That's where we are. And we think that's what? Normal. Isn't that normal? And Shanti Deva saying, no, that's not normal. The reason that is occurring is not because there's anything intrinsically wrong with any of us. It's because we do not have a gatekeeper on our mind. We are not practicing mindfulness, self-awareness of what is arising in terms of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, etc., whatever it is. We need a gatekeeper. Now, that gatekeeper has got to be trained up, right? Don't just pull somebody in off the street and say, all right, now you're the gatekeeper, which, again, many of us do. We don't provide any training to our minds. Right? Gatekeeper is an important function. Sentry on an army base is an important function. If the sentry is asleep, if the sentry doesn't know what they're doing, what's going to happen? Trouble. Right? So, mindfulness, a guard trained. To be what? To be alert. To be awake. To be present. Now, what is vigilant introspection? See, that's me. He calls this mindfulness and vigilant introspection. He calls that mindfulness and the introspection. The introspection means examining, okay? This is also something that we don't have. See, you have the guard. Let's say you've trained him up to be alert. Okay, when you're on duty, your job, stay awake, be alert. But we need to provide them with what? Criteria of who's allowed in and who's not. Is that clear? You know, some people we want to let in. Some people we don't want to let in, right? Those people who are, you know, want to support us and are good for us, we want to what? We want them on the list, right? Okay. But those people who want to do us harm, we don't want them on the list, do we? So, what Shantideva calls this is we need to know what mind states to accept and reject. What type of thoughts to accept and reject. So this is another failure that we have. One, we don't have mindfulness. And two, we don't have this introspective quality that can see clearly there are wholesome mind states and there are unwholesome mind states. Let me ask you a question. Are there good people in this world? You know, people who are basically work from love and kindness. You know, do you have any good friends? Right? There are good people in this world, right? Now let me ask you another question. Are there any bad people in this world? You know, people who just aren't working for the well-being of others, just working for themselves, or want to take advantage of people, want to harm people. Are there anybody ever run into anybody like this? What? Okay. Is common sense, right? And ideally, if we have a choice, who would we like to be friendly with? Good people. Forgive me for being simplistic, but we have to be simple to get it, right? You know, if we're having a party, we don't invite all the bad people, do we? Anybody ever been to a party with lots of bad people? What happens? What? What? Yeah. It's, watch out, what's going to happen? So if you know, you want to associate with good people. You don't want to associate with bad. I mean, we do run into them, and we want to be able to deal with them and help them if we can. But we need to know the difference. If you can't tell the difference between a good person and a bad somebody who really wants to help you and somebody who wants to do you harm, what's your life going to be like? Painful. You're always going to be opened up to being taken advantage of, to be harmed by others. So in the same way, externally in the world, we need some kind of discriminating wisdom. We need this kind of discrimination within our own minds even more so. So the idea of vigilant introspection is there is mindfulness, there's criteria about what to accept, what to reject, what's wholesome, what's a wholesome mind state, what's an unwholesome mind state. And this guard is vigilant in knowing who to let in and who not to let in. What, as Shantideva says, what to accept, what to reject. And this is all internally. Many of us may know how to do that externally, in our lives, in our homes, but internally we don't, and we cultivate, we intensify, we nourish unwholesomeness. And it's not because we're bad people. It's not because we want to be miserable. We just don't know what is being shared with us now. We don't have this capacity within our own minds to know the wholesome from the unwholesome and to have a capacity of working that in a mindful, introspective way. Shantideva says, another name for vigilant introspection is examination. We need to examine our internal life. You know, many of us only examine the actions of our body, speech, and mind afterwards, when we see the results. But what if we had the ability of examining before we acted? Well, that's an interesting thought. Before I speak, maybe I should examine what's going on within me to make sure that I don't speak from an unhealthy place. Be sure I don't speak in a way that is harmful. See, if I could just stop and examine what's going on within me before I acted, well, my life could be very different, and my relationships could be very different. So that capacity to examine, why am I saying this? Why am I doing this? You know, many of us, we were just on autopilot in terms of how we consume and what we eat and how we act, and, you know, we're just like on autopilot. I don't know how the way to say it. We're on autopilot with our conditioning. A spiritual life is an awakened life. To be awake means not to be asleep, right? It's kind of simple. When we're awake, we know what's going on. When you're asleep, we don't know what's going on, right? You could be fast asleep in your room, and especially if you're a deep sleeper, who knows what other people are up to, right? We're asleep. But when we wake up, our eyes, our ears, we see what's going on around us and we can act. We're awake, we're conscious. But many of us in our daily life, we are asleep. We don't really see what's going on. We don't really see what's going on within us. We don't really see what could be the effects or the results of our actions. We don't really see other people. We just see our projections about other people, our thoughts about other people. We don't really see them. And we really don't see them as they really are. We see all our projections, all our ideas based on our conditioning. So, the practice of mindfulness, the practices of vigilant introspection, of this examination, is about leading an awakened life. When we are awake, when the lights are on, when we are conscious, then we can act nobly. We can act in congruence with our values, with our altruism, with our aspirations, with our intentions. But if the light is not on, it's very difficult. Let me stop now. Let's talk about this. Shanti Dev is very strong. He's very clear. He's very passionate. He wants to help us. He wants us to be able to fulfill all the aspirations of our hearts. He wants to help us live in a noble, altruistic life. And he's kind of pinpointing it, why it hasn't worked up to now, and most importantly, how to do it going forward. So if there are any questions now about any of these teachings, or like, all right, well, how do I do it? In the very practical way, everybody's got a life here. Let's spend a few minutes talking about that. And for those of you new, I mean, you can ask anything you want. There's no right or wrong or good or bad here. Yes.
So my question is, how do you really do it? I mean,
how do
I control my elephant? How do I allow the gatekeeper to not allow those thoughts in that I don't want to have? How do I train my mind to do that?
Okay. So this is good. And this is the problem for us. Because we are Americans. And what do we like? We like immediate gratification. We like to get it immediately. And we like it we'd like to get it the easy way. Right? And you see, there we are. Anybody ever, let's not talk about a wild elephant, okay? Let's talk about a puppy. All right? Anybody ever train a puppy? Okay. It takes only a couple hours, right? What, no? No, how about a couple of days? Every now and then, just kind of, No? Lifelong. But in the early stages, when it's a very much a wild puppy, it takes what? Effort. On whose part? Yours. Do you have to be consistent? Do you have to be diligent? Yes. Does the puppy respond immediately? No. Well, that's interesting. If you didn't have him trained perfectly or her trained perfectly in 2 weeks, would you give up? Why not? You read the book, told you what to do. You've been really doing it now for 2 weeks. Puppy's still peeing on the rug, chewing up the... Right? It what? All right. So this is important. Now, again, that's for a puppy. That's basically untrained. Our problem is what? We have been working our way of being in the world for, depending how old you are, for a while, let's say. Okay. So it's a bigger dog. But I have a very good friend who's an animal trainer, and he says even full-grown dogs that have been abused, that have all kinds of terrible things have happened to it, can be trained. And that's what he does. He's a professional, and he loves to work with dogs that nobody else can work with because he knows how to train them. Okay? Now, hopefully, most of us are not that bad. We're somewhere in the middle. But, in answer to your question, we begin like today. We begin by introducing mindfulness into our life. Right? Slowly beginning to attend, not just to the external world, but to what's going on inside our mind. And that's a skill. Has anybody ever learned a skill in this life? How do you learn a skill? Repetition, okay? And have you learned that? It doesn't mean you're going to be a master, but anything you apply yourself to in a consistent, persistent way, you will develop skill at. Is that clear? This is kind of simple. So, again, we all may not end up being the fully enlightened Buddha in this lifetime, but we can definitely develop skill in our mindfulness, in our self-awareness, and then we need criteria, right? Now, there's many teachings about wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, positive and negative mind states, but you know the truth? Just watch your own mind. And if you ask yourself, as you're observing your mind, is this mind state wholesome and healthy? Or is this mind state unwholesome, unhealthy? By cultivating this mindset, am I creating happiness and well-being for myself, or am I creating unhappiness for myself? You just ask yourself that question to each mindset that arises, and you'll see the answer. See? When we're angry at somebody, in that moment of anger and resentment, it feels good, right? Because we're right and they're wrong. And it feels powerful, right? But if I asked us in a moment of more reflection, is anger and resentment a wholesome mind state to cultivate? I'm asking everybody here, is it a wholesome mind state to cultivate for hours and hours and days and days and decades and decades? Is anger, resentment a wholesome emotion to cultivate? And the answer would be what? No. Is fear, anxiety, is that a wholesome mindset that we should just cultivate and cultivate? No, we know it. And I could go on. We know it. Each of us know, if we're willing to stop, right? When you feel friendly toward another human being, how does that feel? Good. Wholesome? When you're patient, when you're understanding, when you're, you know, compassionate, when you're generous. Anybody ever been generous to another human being? How's it feel? Good. Cultivate it. Okay. I mean, this is not, you know, you don't need a PhD in Buddhist psychology to get this one. Just observe your own mind and all of a sudden begin to introduce this idea of wholesome and unwholesome. Mind states, thought patterns, emotional patterns. What supports my well-being? What supports my aspiration for the kind of human being I want to be in this life? And what doesn't? Or what even sabotages it? Okay? And you will develop your criteria. But you've got to give it to the gatekeeper. Don't just keep it to yourself. You got to give it to her. And she's got to be trained up. Over time, she'll get better and better at her function. She won't be perfect in the beginning. He won't be perfect in the beginning. But as she becomes, he becomes more competent and stronger. Many of us feel very weak in the face of our delusions. In the face of our afflictions, we feel very weak, and they feel very strong. Right? And that's the truth. But it is not because they really are that strong. It's that because we have not developed that capacity to really see clearly what's going on. People around, you know, caller ID. When you see that number of somebody you don't want to speak to, what do? Pick up the phone? Tell the truth. What do? What? What do? Ignore it. We don't pick it up. I mean, mind states are like that. They come, and when they first come, most of them do not come high intensity. Most of them just begin with a few little thoughts, a little response, a little bit of irritation, a little bit of frustration, a little bit of work, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And if we catch it then, right, it's much easier to deal with. The trouble is most of us don't notice it until it's a raging fire of emotionality. And then it's difficult. You know, then it's the mad elephant running around in the village. Very difficult to rein in. But when it's first coming up, that's so again, you know, the better your gatekeeper is, the more quickly it identifies what's going on. You refer to your list. I mean, dealing with unwanted calls is very easy. Just don't pick up the phone. I mean, how hard is that? But if you pick up the phone and you let them engage you in conversation, you're in trouble. Why is that? Because they know what they're doing. And they will talk you into it, won't they? Don't pick up. So good. Any other questions before we stop? Anything not clear? So again, this is a practice. We begin where we are, but we understand there is a path, there is a practice, there are practices, and transformation is available to all of us. This is a path that has been practiced for thousands of years. The practices are very efficacious, very simple, pragmatic. The only question is us. Right? Am I really sick of suffering? Am I really sick of afflictions? Do I really want to be happy? In a way that comes from within. Do I want to feel at ease in my life? Have a wholesome mind? Really be a source of support and kindness to everybody in my, in my family, work colleagues, society? That's a question each one of us has to answer for ourselves. Yes, last question. Well, we only have 2 minutes. I feel Charlie's about to.
I just wanted to share an experience because I thought you had said the Pope when you referred to the pup.
No, I did not refer to the
Pope. Okay. And then I, on Easter, I was on my way to work, and to avoid a red light, I took a right so I could keep the flow going. And I turned down this really odd street, and someone had intentionally put a painting on top of a big pile of trash that was sparkling like on a pink lotus flower. And I just thought it was so neat because I just caught a glimpse of it and I passed it up, and then I put the car in reverse and I was like, wow, oh. So I brought it home. Now it's on my fence. And I just thought it was a very special gift. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, so thank you everyone for coming, and we'll stop here and there'll be a few announcements.